close it, he will do the first close, and she will do second. So maybe when you start the first question, you can start at the same time. To our forum for District 3. A few housekeeping. Can you all hear me?
Yes.
Couple things. Housekeeping. The restrooms are straight down the hall, out the double set of doors. Please take your phones and put them on silent so we'll be able to always hear the speakers. And I've been asked that this will be, you know, two separate debates. And so when we do finally leave the building, or if you have to leave before the second is started or something, please pick up that tissue or the cough drop paper or your water bottle and take it out and put it in the trash. Then the staff here doesn't have to go around and do that. So I appreciate your cooperation. My name is Biz Steinberg, and I serve as the CEO for the Community Action Partnership here in San Luis Obispo. It is my pleasure and my honor tonight to fill in for Jacqueline Frederick, who has a family emergency. We wish her the very best where she needs to be this evening. The format will be that our candidates will begin with an opening statement, which will be Ms. Stacy Korsgaden, and the second will be given by Mr. Adam Hill. The closings will alternate in this case. Mr. Adam Hill will do the closing first, and Ms. Stacy Korsgaden will do the second closing. Right now, I would like to introduce one of the sponsoring organizations, the League of Women Voters. Mara Lee is going to come forward and give the overview of the guidelines for this evening. And she's right there to my left. Thank you, Mara Lee.
Thank you, Biz. Good evening. Thank you for being here. I'd like to go over the rules for the format briefly and who is helping us out here. You already heard that we have an opening statement. It will be 3 minutes. The closing will be 3 minutes. And for each question, the candidates have 1.5 minutes unless the moderator, Biz, changes the rules, and she'll let you know if that happens. The League of Women Voters is a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization of women and men, 25% of us are men, established to promote political responsibility through an informed, active participation in government. And that's what you're doing tonight, and we're here to help you. The League does not support either parties or candidates. So we try to get you informed, get ourselves informed, and get you out there to vote, because that's what our democracy is all about. I'd like to introduce our helpers from the League tonight. We have the people who have been getting your questions, and all throughout the forum, you can write your questions. They're standing right in the back there. So would you raise your hand, please? Victoria Condor Williams, Bonnie Ernst, Norma Guzman, and Cynthia Pretzel. So they're there to hand you out more cards, one question per card, and they'll collect it, and they will bring it up to our sorters here. And our sorters this evening are Claudia Davis, and we changed who's doing what. Shelley Higginbotham and Ann Quinn. And they'll be sorting your questions into categories. It's possible that we could get all your questions tonight, given that we're a little light in numbers. But if it's duplicative, we try try not to do that. You don't want to be bored with the same question and answer over and over. So that's their job. They will sort and suggest the order of questions. They will hand them to the two readers who are way over there on the left. That is Jerry Mihatch, who is on the board of the Latino Outreach, our other co-sponsor of the forum. And we have Jean Chinichi, who is a member of the League of Women Voters. The last person who's helping us out is Mary Beth Armstrong. Mary Beth, would you hold up your card for 30 seconds, please? She's warning and keeping track of the time. When you see that, you know they're running out of time. And the stop, which means you are out and please stop talking. Okay. And I think that's all I need to do for rules and how things are going.
Thank you so much, Marilee, and we thank the League of Women Voters for your sponsorship. I also want to welcome you on behalf of Jacqueline Frederick, and she has a couple of important announcements for you, and I will repeat this at our second session. The Latino Outreach Council will be participating with our International Film Festival here in San Luis Obispo, and they will be sponsoring a film from the golden age of Mexican cinema. CR, how do you say that? Enamora.
Enamorada.
Okay, that's what we're having. And then in May, around Mother's Day, I want to invite you on her behalf to the Mother's Day Fiesta Saturday, May 9th. So you will hear more information throughout the next few months about these activities. And we all want to thank the Latino Outreach Council for their leadership as well and partnership in providing this forum tonight. Okay, we are ready to begin. We will begin with the opening statement by Ms. Stacy Korsgaden, candidate for District 3 supervisor.
Thank you. I'd like to thank the League of Women League of Women Voters and also the Latino Outreach for putting this on and for all the participants that are here in the audience. My name is Stacy Korsgaden, and Korsgaden in Norwegian, if you don't know Norwegian, means crossroads. And the reason I decided to run for office is I believe that California and the county of San Luis Obispo is at a crossroads. This is a rhetorical question, but I'm wondering if any one of you here has known someone that has decided to recently leave the state of California. And a lot of people have. I've crossed the board in my meetings. I've heard that. And I've done a lot of traveling across the world. And when I come back to the United States, I think it's the absolute greatest country in the world. And if we look at California, it's the greatest state in the union. And I think by far, San Luis Obispo County is the greatest county of the 58 counties in the state of California. Well, why was it that in 1 month last year, I had six of my clients decide to leave the state of California? And I believe that it can be summed up because of housing costs, regulations, and the controls that are being put on the citizens of our great state and our great county. So the reason I have decided to run is after talking to the many citizens in our local communities, whether it be Grover Beach, Pismo, part of Arroyo Grande, Avila Beach, and 60% of San Luis Obispo, there's something that similar is going on. The leadership in District 3 has failed to communicate the concerns of our local citizens, and I am here to represent and to change that, and I would appreciate your vote.
Thank you. Next, we will hear from Mr. Adam Hill, also a candidate for 3rd District Supervisor.
Thank you, Biz. And again, also thank you to the League of Women Voters and to the Latino Outreach Council for sponsoring and everybody for coming out tonight. I think this is like the 3rd or 4th one we've done. We've got a few more, so these are welcome conversations. We have many issues and challenges before us. I want to take a little bit of time here, talk about what's important and part of what we've been doing and what I've been doing. So as you know, probably the critical issue before us in the district and in the county is the looming closure of Diablo Canyon. This is something that We didn't have a role in terms of determining when and how, but we will have the lead role going forward on land use, on decommissioning, and the future storage and the 12,000 acres of beautiful coastal land. And in fact, over the next couple of years, most of the critical decisions that will occur are going to happen in concert with the County Board of Supervisors and the state and the feds and, of course, PG&E, which, as we know, is still emerging from bankruptcy. So we've got a lot before us, and I bring the experience and the relationships and the understanding. And I often use this chart because it is a bit forbidding, but it shows the various decision points moving forward in the different agencies. And the decisions that will be made here locally are going to affect this county for the next 50 years. And this is critical that we get it right because we're not going to have another chance at it. Other issues that we all know are of critical importance. Homelessness has become an urgent problem throughout the state. And particularly over the last few years, I felt very comfortable getting back involved in a leadership role, helping the county craft its approach to homelessness, because the state for the first time has been putting real money into local jurisdictions. And so we've been able to do everything over the last couple of years that we haven't been able to do in a while, such as stand-up services in North County, up in Paso Robles, help Echo go 24/7, also help, even though she's choking right now, 40 Prado and Biz be able to move forward on building our first detox, and for Five Cities Homeless Coalition to buy their first building and have their first permanent presence. And this next coming year, we're going to help open up services on the North Coast in Morro Bay, and we'll also be able to look to build housing, which will be critical. We all know there's other issues. Traffic congestion, particularly those of us who travel frequently between this city and South County and beyond. So we've been able to prioritize money for the 227, and we've been able to prioritize money for the 101 Shell Beach Straits corridor. So hopefully we get to talk about that. Essentially, you know, I'm happy to be able to talk about all these issues, even though for me it's always hard to kind of get it into, you know, 1.5 minutes or so. But we have much to discuss, much to do. I think that where we're headed in the county and beyond is a critical time as well. And hopefully we'll get into the substance beyond the talking points tonight. So thanks for being here.
Thank you both for your opening statements. No, I'm good. Before we begin the questions, please hold your applause until we complete the forum. That will allow us more time for the candidates to fully respond to the questions. And the last thing is, for the candidates, thank you, Mary Beth. She's going to keep track. You get to respond for 1.5 minutes, 90 seconds. If we get a question that seems like it needs more time, I'll make that judgment. Okay? We're ready. And I'm going to ask that the first question will go to Stacy.
What is the county doing to better address homelessness?
One of my great concerns, and what statistics show and people that I'm talking to, it is the number one concern is homelessness. We have seen a 10-year plan be implemented in this county by Adam Hill, and the 10 years are up and our homeless numbers are increasing. I know it's something that he cares about deeply, and I understand that, but we have to do something differently. And when I say something differently, I look at the approach that I would like to take is similar to, it's call it what it is, it's a crisis. And if we keep doing the same thing over and over again, which is throwing money at a situation, we're going to continue having the same results. So we have to recognize that what has been happening in the last 12 years since Adam Hill has been in office is not working. So I would like to recommend fresh ideas, and relating it to similar to the insurance field, which is what I 31 years in the insurance field, is creating emergency shelters in three different sections of our county, and 13% of our population, which is 1,700, are vets. I would really like to focus on the vets and possibly partner with Camp San Luis. And thank you.
Adam, it is your time to respond.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, Stacey's been talking about these various plans for I guess from the beginning, and I'm still waiting to hear anything that we're not doing or hasn't been done. But the critical thing is, in fact, which I mentioned in the opening, we have opened up emergency shelters throughout our county, and in fact, we've stood up services with state money in places that have never had services before. And we have now, we're on track to have the first detox center that we've had in our county. We're going to build some more housing because that's ultimately that. I've been part of the board that created the first chronically housing program. It was started out at 50 now. Now it's 70 now. We have seen a continual increase in mental health dollars through the Mental Health Services Act as well. So we opened up a crisis stabilization unit last year over near our psychiatric unit. And there's much more we're doing. And in fact, this is a conversation I've gotten to travel all over the state to see what is occurring and what people are doing and working with the governor's people and the legislature. And this has received the most attention from a governor in my entire time in this, certainly in this state and in anybody's memory. And it will be critical to do what we're doing, which is not just to spend those dollars, but to show the effect and the metrics. That's why we have a system to do that. And I think most people who've been to other places, particularly metropolitan areas, realize that we have a much greater handle on things than other places, which is not to say that we don't have a serious problem. And we'll talk some more, hopefully, because Biz knows a lot about this because her agency is responsible for things like the veterans homeless outreach. But we're doing a lot, and there's much more to do. Thank you.
Thank you. Question number two will go first to Mr. Hill.
So what solutions do you have for improving city-to-city commute traffic, especially in the Highway 227 corridor?
Yeah. Good question, and obviously increasingly important, because we have seen, as Slo City has grown, and we have seen economic activity around the airport. I've been very involved in that and very involved in the success of our airport. The impact has particularly been on 227, which at peak hours is certainly congested. So we've been able to prioritize money through our Council of Governments in conjunction with our city reps, also with Supervisor Compton, another South County rep, to be able to put money. So we're currently in the final phases of a study, and what will happen most likely on 227, but not without the participation of the community, and we've been working with them, is something along the lines of traffic circles to improve the flow. Well, everybody knows that they'd like to have more lanes. We don't necessarily have the money from ourselves and from the state to do all that, but we also know, and what we rely on is what has worked and what has worked throughout the state and the country, and we basically want to get traffic moving in those peak hours. So we have the money prioritized. We've worked pretty well to do that. And the other side of it, as I said earlier, is going to be the Shell Beach corridor, and we're going to be opening up a lane for peak hours in that area as well. So we're doing it. It's going to take some while, and I understand anybody who lives here who gets stuck in any amount of traffic has a right to feel annoyed. It's probably the thing that people who've escaped other parts of California don't want to revisit the most. But we're going to be able to get there.
Ms. Gorskazen.
Thank you. Bottom line, in our world, it's results matter. And after 12 years, we have a growing and increasing problem with traffic. So when I talk to the people off of Country Club in that area, the communication has been poor. And my understanding is that traffic circles are not desirable in that corridor. And the reason is the traffic is congested during the high commute times, and it's a thoroughfare. There is enough room there to actually widen the lanes. And I know it's a financial issue, but there are some allocations that I feel that would it be better to do the foundation, the infrastructure right to begin with? The answer is yes. And if we look at the 12 years that we've had to deal with this issue, we still have a problem with Highway 101. If 101, there's a lane for those of you that are going south that is creates a third lane, and then it abruptly stops. I would like to see that lane actually follow or increase a six lane, three lanes going south, three lanes going north, and that will relieve the traffic that is now blocking Buckley, 227, all the other arteries. People are trying to find a shorter way to go home. Let's look at the main issue, which is Highway 101.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Question three will be directed to Ms. Korsgaard.
In the light of Diablo Canyon closing and potentially Oceano Dunes, what ideas do you have for job creation?
That's a great, well, first of all, starting with the Oceano Dunes, which is something that we have control over right now, is to protect it. Right now, in the beginning of the year, we have a situation where 48 acres was recently closed. Do you know that 2 million people enjoy that park every year? They're people from all over the world. 2 million people coming in and out of our community and using our local services and businesses. It's critical that we look at alternatives. And what's happened, one of the main reasons why I decided to get into this race is I don't feel that our local jobs have been protected. And so would people look at things differently if I were to tell you that there's a potential where there's an eco-dust fence that could be implemented, and it could be implemented rather quickly, rather inexpensively, installed, where then the camping could then be restored and we could protect the citizens up on the mesa, which health is a huge concern. So I'm mainly talking about the jobs, the 3,300 jobs that I feel that we need to protect right now. When it comes to Diablo, we need a master plan. I would like to see the parcel, it's called Parcel P, where the plant is on right now. I would like to see a major company come in that would create high-paying jobs.
Thank you. Mr. Hill.
Yeah. Excuse me. Thank you. This is one of the great pleasures that I've had since I've joined the board, and it was actually something that I was focused on running when I first came to do so, because I came from Cal Poly, was jobs in our local economy. And we have done so much with challenges ahead of us, including, of course, the closure of Diablo. But we've been able to grow our tech. I mean, you can't have it both ways. You can't say, well, we want to have a thriving economy, but we shouldn't have a thriving economy because it might back things up on the 101 and the 227. The reason why things are backed up is because of the great work that we have out there, because of the tech companies, because of hands-on work for myself with commercial developers and companies like MindBody to keep them in our community, to make sure that our new airport terminal was built, and not just built, but built in a time when everybody thought we were going to, you know, basically lose all of our commercial air service. We have more commercial air service now than ever before. This has been a critical part of what we're doing. We're also working with, and some of you have heard, the Hourglass Project, which is essentially hosted out of Cal Poly, and we're working with them to help us look post-Diablo. In fact, this next board meeting next Tuesday, 1:30, tune in or come by, and you'll see the Hourglass give us an update on what they've been doing, because they've been working throughout the region, and we'll see the kinds of partnerships. As many people know, my work with Cal Poly has also led to our partnership in the county with the Hot House downtown to help our young entrepreneurs get the help they need to start their own companies and to be able to put their own products forward. And so we're doing a lot. There's more to be done. There's more we can talk about. I'd love to talk about it, but I see the stop sign, so I'll yield and stop. But
thank you.
This is a key question.
Thank you. We'll go on with Mr. Hill for question four.
Okay. What are you going to do about contaminated groundwater in wells south of the airport? The chemicals are TCE and PFAS.
Yeah, well, that has received some attention and is being addressed. At first, I think there was the Water Board is essentially in control. The Regional Water Quality Board is in control of groundwater and contamination. And so they've identified the sources, which are not the county. At first, because of the airport area, there was some concern, and we helped to join the testing of it. Because, of course, we want to relieve the problem, period, but we also wanted to see who was ultimately responsible and where the sources of that contamination came from. It's come from the industrial industrial park, and including from a company that is no longer here, but there's a reason why companies have certain obligations when it comes to things down the road. So that's being addressed. It is one of those things that, you know, it starts out as a mystery, but because of the water board and because of our cooperation with it, there is a path ahead. It's not just to fix the pollution, but also to hold the people who were responsible for the contaminants that leaked into the ground and leaked in ultimately to some of the groundwater, to hold them responsible as well.
Thank you. Ms. Korsgaard.
I was at a meeting last night with some concerned citizens right off of Buckley where this groundwater is potentially a concern. And can you say Aaron Brockovich? It's potentially a huge problem. And it's been known, the county has been known, has known about this issue, and it's affecting our citizens' groundwater. And there has been had to be an implementation. The local citizens have had to place a filter in their well. It costs them individually about $3,300. And I can only tell you that if I was representing District 3, I would be screaming from the mountaintops saying, where is this coming from? We've got to protect our citizens' health, and we've got to get to the bottom of it. So at this point, it's being ignored, and it's a huge concern. Now there's a new chemical that appears to be coming into the water. I have the name of, but anyway, there's literally a plume where it's stretching out from the airport, and it's a big mystery. And it's our job, first job as public servants, is for public safety. So it's a concern that it's not being dealt with.
Can I respond? Because I think the response is not accurate and also damaging to the county and what they do. And so
just
I think
30 seconds, and then also Stacey.
Yeah, sure. I don't think Stacey. And again, I say this as somebody who likes Stacey. She's a nice person, but she's not always up on the issues or has done the homework. There are agencies of responsibility, and the county is one of them. But the State Water Board is the key responsibility. Our chief medical officer has been part of this. There is no lack of response or diligence. Are there people who would prefer that the county take responsibility and pay for things? Sure. But there's a legal process. You know, the county, if the county is just going to accept responsibility for something they're not done, rather than to try to protect and clean up, then you're going to see major lawsuits that won't be very productive. So, you know, I think the accusations that you have to be careful about those things, because it's pretty, you know, it's been reported too. And if you look
Thank
at the
you.
Reports, you'll
Thank
see
you,
that what she's saying is not accurate.
And Ms. Korsgaard, do you want to have 30 seconds?
When I'm elected,
we'll
I am the voice of the people of District 3. And I would represent District 3 and be communicating to the water board, the county, the state, to remedy the situation so the situation, drinking water for the constituents, my constituents, would be taken care of. There's a problem. There needs to be a voice. And when I'm elected, I'll be the voice.
Thank you. Let's move to the fifth question. Question number 5 for Ms. Korsgaard.
What do you feel is the county government's role in addressing child care challenges such as affordability for parents, working wage for providers?
So that's a great question. So when we look at the cost of living in our county, it's one of the more expensive counties to live. Number one, just to live here, whether it be the cost if you don't own a property, the cost of rent, the cost to purchase a home, all of the cost of gasoline, transportation, all of those costs are a heavy burden on our local families. So one thing that I would look at is looking at overall the cost of regulations that are put in place on our community as a whole. And that would be the first thing that I would look at. I don't feel that it's the government's role necessarily for to pay for childcare. What I do believe is supporting our local organizations that can help our families, whether it be through the nonprofits, whether it be through our faith-based community, and supporting those local organizations. When it comes to the loss of jobs, protecting our jobs, which is a foremost concern, if we look at what's happening with the 3,300 jobs just affecting the Oceano Dunes, that's just one microcosm that we have to look at protecting.
Thank you. Mr. Hill.
Yeah, we've learned from our first five agency that child care is an absolutely critical issue in the many issues that add into this precariousness that a lot of people who work here and live here are faced with. And so I actually believe that the county should follow the models that we've seen at Cal Poly and that we've seen from some of our private employers, for instance, down in that area where we see there's child care at Mind Body, there's child care at Trust Automation, there's even child care between companies where they share. I believe the county needs to step up and do the same for our employees. It has been asked as a benefit. It is a critical benefit because one of the things that we realize, especially as a retention issue, we're one of the largest employers. The county employs 2,000 people. And one of the biggest retention issues that we hear about is the expense that some of our younger employees that obviously have families have to spend and the difficulty of finding good child care too. And so I believe the county should look at its role as a major employer, as we have seen with Cal Poly. When you go over the campus, you see the child center. You go over to some of the businesses out by the airport area, you see child care centers there too. This should be, I believe, part of what we do for our employees because it keeps our employees here and it also, helps them take care of their kids and provides a certain amount of security that doesn't exist right now. That's our biggest turnover rate is among young people who are either in the midst of a young family or planning to have a family. So for me, I'm glad to hear that First Five and others are advocating, and they've come before the board to do so too, for us to step up and say, let's work with our employee groups and have our own child care for our folks.
Thank you. Okay, question number six. The first will go to Mr. Hill.
Often county construction projects are awarded to out-of-town employers who don't hire local workers. What would you do to help this situation?
Yeah, it's a continually good question, and I see some of, I'm proud of the support that I have of our major unions in our county, our major construction trades, because the folks that work in our community are the folks that we need to be able to work with and make sure that they have jobs. And so I've been a proponent of something called a project labor agreement for the county forever, but I have not been on the majority side to make that happen. And essentially the way to understand this is, look, and I'll say that because I helped to lobby on behalf of some of our construction trades, that this city, so the city of SLO, entered into a labor agreement on their wastewater treatment facility, and it's a great thing. Because when you're a public agency, you're already paying prevailing wage. You're already paying what should be paid to our working people. And so what people want to know is, how can we make sure it stays here? Instead of bringing companies from Bakersfield or Las Vegas, how do we know that the people who are trained here, our electricians, our plumbers, our steam fitters, our tradespeople, how do they get the job? And that's something that I have promised. I don't have three votes for it. I hope I have three votes for it in the future because it is something that I know. And we are, let's face it, most of our major employers that are public agencies, they're labor. They're providing benefits for our workers. And we should want the step further that we should do is, hey, we're already paying, we're already paying prevailing wage. Let's make sure it stays here and let's make sure that it goes to the people who come out of our shops, who come out of our apprentice programs and know how to get these things done well. I did that with the solar projects, and those were private projects, but I told the solar companies, do a project labor agreement, hire our people, and guess what? 1,000-plus people work for 4 years.
Thank you. Ms. Korsgaard.
Thank you. Thank you. When it comes to my belief on this is that I support the local taxpayer. The person that's going to get the job will be the one that is the best person and the best organization to provide the service for our local jobs. My hope is that when we look at hiring and the work that needs to be will be done will be our local workers. And I will say right now that I will be protecting the taxpayer, and I come from a private sector employer. Our largest sector in our county is the private sector, where they are self-employed, where they have employees that they handle the work comp, they handle the insurance, they provide 401ks. Because it's a competitive workplace, they have benefits that they provide. I believe that competition is the best way that we can get the best service at the lowest cost, and to provide that kind of service to our local economy.
Can I clarify on that?
Thank you.
I think it's helpful if we could just.
I think we'll move on.
Okay.
Right. Thank you.
I'll try to wind back.
Question number 7 will go to Ms. Korsgaden.
How do you plan to support our large student population?
Well, being a graduate from Cal Poly, that's a very broad question. But let me make some assumptions. How do we keep our young people in our community? I was fortunate enough that after I graduated, I was able to start my business from scratch and stay here. It's becoming harder and more difficult. And I think one of the reasons is housing. And housing has been a big issue in our area, and I think it's because of the regulations that's been put on housing. For example, and I said this last time, for someone that is in San Luis Obispo, he would like to build two two-bedroom units and a studio on his property. And think of what that could house, possibly 6 to 8 people in that property, where we could keep the young students here after they graduate. For him to build the regulations, it will be over $120,000. He worked out the numbers. $120,000 to build that. It's a real deterrent. So at a time when we want to build more housing and to have people stay in our community, our young, vibrant workers, we've got to look at getting out of the way, reducing our regulation, and have an incentive for people to build and have our young people stay here.
Thank you, Mr. Hill.
Can you repeat the question? I'm sorry, if you wouldn't mind repeating the question.
Read the question once more, please.
Certainly. How do you plan to support our large student population?
Okay. Well, you know, having been very involved first as a faculty member at Cal Poly and now working, we have a terrific partnership with Cal Poly here in the county. The biggest issue, as we know, especially in this city, and our city council and city staff deal with it all the time, is the impacts of students on housing. And so the administration over at Cal Poly has committed and has continued to move forward on building more housing on campus, which is the best place for it. It has the least impact on the neighborhoods, and it's also better for students to be on campus. They do better. Studies show that they perform better when they're on campus. And we all know that it just is a healthier community. So we have worked with the city. There's a master plan out now. But as you know, Cal Poly has, over the last few years, has built more dormitories than ever before. Under President Armstrong, that's going to continue. So that's critical. But we've worked, as I said before, also on the post-student life, which is how to keep them here and get them jobs. That's why, you know, I led our effort of partnership on the Hot House, which has been a real success for our entrepreneurs and our young businesses, and even businesses that are already here. But we're also working, you know, we're working with as I said before, the Hot House in Cal Poly. But we have a partnership with them on our park at El Choro Regional. We have continued to, because we understand, and I've always understood that coming from Cal Poly, that, look, our talent is here. We just need to figure out how to keep them here on campus as much as we possibly can, which is happening, and then figure out how to get jobs for them in our community. More of that's been happening, and I think that the relations between even the city and Cal Poly have improved as we've seen more housing happen on campus.
Thank you. We have gotten through 7 questions.
Let's keep
going.
We're
on to question 8, and that will go first to Mr. Hill.
What is your position on offshore oil drilling and why?
Yeah, I'm opposed to it. I've been opposed to it from the start, and I think that's reflective of our community, as you know. And I mean, long before I even came, was lucky enough to come here. In the 80s, this community passed a measure on the ballot because big oil companies were pushing to try to have offshore offshore oil platforms, just like we've seen in Santa Barbara. And we know even as recently as the last couple of years, these things leak, and they cause damage, and they cause disasters. And so what happened in our community was that for any onshore facilities to happen, this was Measure B in the late 80s, you would have to go before the voters, and it's prevented. One of the first things I did when I came into office was author a letter to the administration, to the Interior Secretary, opposing this. The threat exists because of the Trump administration. It's pretty clear that we have a coastal economy that's dependent on clean water and clean beaches. You put that at jeopardy, and it will destroy this place. So I think most people understand that offshore oil drilling, we live next to the county that created, you know, the first major disaster problems. I mean, that's why we even have Earth Day, because of the spill in the 60s in Santa Barbara, and that has continued. Look, we know where we're headed. We have to move away, as we have continued to do so, and we've done so in this county, away from oil. And certainly the last thing we should be doing, and that's why the Trump administration represents such a threat, is trying to open public lands and trying to open our coast to oil drilling. That runs counter to our values. It certainly runs counter to what the public has said again and again and again.
Thank you. Ms. Korsgaden.
I'm for all forms of energy. I believe that California has some of the most strict guidelines to protect our environment. And if we're going to use oil, or at this time oil, and if we're looking at transporting it from a foreign country and shipping it across the ocean versus having it utilized in our wonderful resources that we have with our strict guidelines, I would rather do it here and have the jobs here in California. With that said, I believe that it is probably something that will, in 10 years, we probably won't be utilizing. I think we'll be using energy that we can't even imagine, that we'll probably have energy that we'll be able to plug in our cars in our garages. And if government will get out of the way and let us do what we do best, which is to innovate and to create, I believe that we will have some world-class energy that we can't imagine, and to me that's exciting. I think that where we've come from recently and why people are leaving California is that California is trying to control that innovative pioneer spirit, that creative spirit that we as a nation can be proud of. And in California, we have a history of that innovation. So I'm one where we can look at the future with excitement.
Thank you. We are moving to question 9, and I promise I'm going to try to get number 10 in too. So the first person will be Ms. Korsgaden will get question 9 first.
What are your thoughts on the correlation between medical cannabis use and the crime rate, mental illness impacts?
Well, I think we have to look at the use of cannabis, and I'm pro you. The use of cannabis for medical relief is a wonderful solution, and I think it's great that people have that option. When I believe that we also have the obligation to protect our youth. There's an ongoing study that when people use cannabis, marijuana, at a young age, that there's a possibility that there is a problem with mental illness or schizophrenia. It's a big concern. So this is a whole new industry for California. It's been approved. It's a legal industry. So we have to tread lightly. I think it can bring jobs. I believe that it will bring opportunity. But with that, This is one where we have to look at the public health of our kids, especially. We have to look at protecting our vineyards, because there's some studies out in, like in Davis, the School of Agriculture, where if you have cannabis growing by a vineyard, you could harm the vineyard. And I'm pro protecting our multi-million dollar grape and wine industry. So it's a balancing act. So love the fact that it helps people with illness, but as a land use body, when I'm the county board rep for District 3, I would be very cautious in protecting our existing crops and protecting our youth.
Thank you. Mr. Hill.
Sorry to ask again, but it helps. Can I get the question repeated?
Sure.
What are your thoughts on the correlation between medical cannabis use and the crime rate and mental illness impacts?
Yeah, I don't, you know, the truth is there isn't an established correlation. There is some suggestions that there may be, but it's not even what we see here as the major issue. Nonetheless, I mean, we do everything we can to protect young people. And in fact, I helped to lead our board just a few weeks ago to ban vaping, because that has been the critical problem in the schools. You know, we had the superintendent of schools come and talk to us. We had principals from all the schools, all the school districts, and said, look, the thing that's really causing the biggest problems, it's hard to detect, is vaping. That's happening in incredibly low levels. And so we banned vaping. Happily did it. We also banned smoking, which we should have done before, in all of our places, all of our public parks, and that's good. We should always put public health first. The real problem, and we have been part of a class action suit to sue Big Pharma, is opiates. Opiates continues to be the addictive problem that has caused terrible havoc, has caused deaths throughout. And so we are, you know, continually working with our public health department to make sure that we, and with our schools, to protect kids. I hope that, you know, because we've heard Stacey talk a lot about the dunes. I would hope that we would extend our values towards public health to everything, including the people who live on the Mesa, who have been suffering through terrible dust plumes, through the workers who work out in Napomo fields who have to go breathe in that air too. Everybody that lives in our community deserves, as job number one from your elected officials, public health. That's what we should always look to first. And I've always been proud of not just being a vote for public health for our kids and our seniors, but to be a leader.
Thank you. Moving to question 10, Mr. Hill will respond first.
Property owners in county wildland fire areas are losing their fire insurance as insurance companies cancel policies. Can government help?
The state government is really the answer, and they have been working with insurance. In fact, the reason why we do have an insurance agency, a commissioner and an insurance agency, is because California historically has natural disasters that are unique, or at least have a greater impact, everything from earthquakes, and now we see the effects of wildfire. So it's a concern, because we have people in, you know, I have the most urbanized district, but we have people who live in the rural interface, particularly out in some of the canyons, where they have lost their insurance, and it is a terrible fear and something that's difficult. I mean, what we can do, which is what we do, which is make sure that we have the best fire protection that we possibly can, to make sure that we're continually educating our homeowners, to make sure that they're doing what they need to do to keep things clear and to keep vegetation clear and all that. And also, you know, we work really hard with, obviously our focus is land use, and some of the, you know, most people know this. You can go to different places throughout our community, my district all the way up through the North County and North Coast, where there are communities that were built in areas that would not be approved today. And the reason they wouldn't be approved today, because of how far deep into the wildlands and the fire threat that they represent. Our own Cal Fire folks, who are great, and I'm proud to be supported by our Cal firefighters, you know, they are having to deal with wildfires unlike any we have ever seen. And that's because of climate change, and also because of some of the historic development patterns that we've seen here and we've seen throughout California. And that's why you're seeing more building coming inside the urban envelope and being denser.
Thank you. I'm just going to spend a minute with my questioners. I've asked our folks to do one more question, okay? And this question number 11 will go to Ms.
Do you mind if I answer that last question?
Oh, I'm so...
No, that's okay, because I know...
That caught me!
No,
then we will be right perfect.
Thank you, Adam.
Thank you.
So
I apologize.
That's okay. Can you ask the question one more time? I want to make sure I answer it.
That was on the fire insurance. Fire. Thank you. Sorry. That's all right.
Go ahead.
That question was, property owners in county wildland fire areas are losing their fire insurance as insurance companies cancel policies. Can government help?
Yes. You know, that's a big concern statewide. We are seeing this in our county. The state actually has what's called the FAIR plan. There are other companies out there that have what's called a wraparound. So it's a partnership with the state of California and local insurance companies. So there are resolutions to that. It is a problem because what happens is the prices, sometimes it's three or four times the cost. So it's a problem. What I do see is a lot of the problems have been caused by the fact that areas were not properly cleared, so there was a lot more fuel than there should have been. There should have been maybe a proper allowance of people to be able to clear their land to prevent it. I've talked to the people of Avila, and I've talked to the people of Pismo, and what there are some mutual concerns with the beautiful Pismo Preserve is that there doesn't seem to be a coordination with Cal Fire and Fire Protection, and also in Avila having a greater ability to work with Cal Fire and the county to protect and to prevent fires. That we haven't had a fire in that area, thank goodness, but we're going to have to act aggressively to protect our homeowners, and that's going to take some coordinated efforts with the county and Cal Fire.
Thank you both for your responses to all 10 of the questions. It is now time for each of them to give their closing statement, and we will begin. They flipped a coin, and Mr. Adam Hill will go first with his closing.
How much time again? Three? All right.
Isn't it? It's three, right? 3 minutes.
All right, we're going to go on. Well, thank you. Thanks for everybody's attention today. Thank you again to the League and to the Latino Outreach Council. You know, and thanks to Stacey. You know, this is about the fourth time we've appeared together. It's kind of a show now. I like her. She's a very nice person, and from all accounts of people who do business with her agency, she's very good. And I wouldn't change a thing. That said, you know, it still comes down to substance and knowledge and experience and really knowing. It's a complicated, whether we like it or not, government's complicated, and the times we live in are complicated. And so the things that we have before us are not things that you could just learn on the fly or just, you know, rely on talking points, but you got to know what's going on, and you got to know how to address this, and you have to have the relationships to do this. And so everything from, you know, I'm glad that you mentioned the Pismo Preserve because it just opened last weekend, and that's something that I've had a critical role in. You know, when that 9-month period to raise the money, I worked with the Land Conservancy to help that happen, help get money from this board. Most of the cities, I think, if not all the cities, participated. We got money from the Water Board. We got money from the state. We were able to buy that, and then we came across a problem. And if you were there at the opening, you would have heard that, you know, we had archaeological issues, and we had to work with the Chumash. And so I sat down with the Chumash leaders, and I sat down with the Land Conservancy, and we said, we're going to do this right. We're going to respect this sacred site. And now it has been a thrill for me. There's very few times you get to do something in any government that lasts forever, and that's one of those things that lasts forever. You got 900 acres, but you know what I said at that opening was, you know, what we want to do is do it again. And so we know there's 12,000 acres that surround Diablo Canyon Power Plant, and we know that at least, you know, 3,000 of them had been looked at for conservation previously, and in my estimation, it would provide an opportunity unlike any we have seen on this coast to conserve that land, to turn it into a public resource, to turn it into a park. It connects from Avila to Montana de Oro. There is land and views there that are just astounding. And when you talk to the folks in our tourism industry, boy, they just get really excited, just like they have been for the Pismo Preserve. So these are, you know, we have have many opportunities, but also you should look back on the things that we've done, that we've been successful on. You know, I've been on a board that's addressed some of the biggest challenges we've had. Jail health care. A couple of years ago, that's all anybody wanted to talk about. Nobody's asking about it anymore. Nobody. Not just because we haven't had happily repeats of some of the tragedies out there, but because we stepped up and worked with our sheriff and worked with our health department to make sure that we redo the entire system. We've redone the entire jail health care system. It's still a jail. It's still a tough place, but we have no excuses anymore, and we feel like we know how to address these things. Those kinds of issues, they don't happen because of people not listening or people wanting just to listen to a few people are unhappy about something or growth of the cities. We have a pretty good record. You know, I feel very good about what we've done, and I feel even better about what we're going to do over the next 4 years. So thanks so much for coming, and Biz, thank you.
Thank you. And Ms. Korsgaden, it is your turn for your closing.
Thank you. My name is Stacey Korsgaden, and I would like you to look in the future, 4 years from now, and what my goal would be for District 3 in the County of San Luis Obispo. What I would like you to see is a representative in me, and you will not be able to tell if I'm a Republican or a Democrat. What you will see is a representative that listened to the issues, that looked at the fact that homelessness was actually, the numbers were decreasing because we looked outside of the box. We worked together with all of the different departments, nonprofits, government, non-government, and decreased the numbers. That we looked together at the traffic issues, and instead of building first, we built the infrastructure first and created a roadmap going forward so people could go safely in and out of their driveway without being concerned, and that people could travel to their home from work, from San Luis Obispo to different areas in the county in a timely manner. This is not a partisan job. This is a nonpartisan job. I've been in the business world for 31 years where results matter. And I've worked with employees. I've got long-term employees. I've worked with the community. I've worked with nonprofits. I've been the chairs of board, have taken leadership roles. And so I come as a public servant. And sometimes that does get lost. Public servants means someone comes from the public and chooses to serve and represent the local community. And I'm offering that as a community member. I will listen and work hard for District 3 and the County of San Luis Obispo, and I'd appreciate your vote.
Thank you both. I want to have all of us join the League of Women Voters and the Latino Outreach Council in thanking both of our candidates. They're both running for office. They've been with us tonight. I want to thank the audience for your excellent questions, your attention, and a couple of notes from the League of Women Voters.
Oh, yeah.
This is the 100th anniversary of the women's voting and the 100th year of since the founding of the League of Women Voters, which I think is great, too. Now, out in the lobby, if you need to change your address or update your registering to vote, it is available out there for you to do. We want you all to vote on March 3rd, and our District 5 forum will follow in just a few minutes as we get reorganized. So from all of us up here, I want to thank our question folks. Particularly, we wouldn't have gotten through without Mary Beth and her timekeeping. Thank you so much. Mary Lee representing the board. And lastly, again, Mr. Hill and Ms. Korsgaden. Thank you both for participating tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. Would you all please find your seat, and we will begin in 1 minute. Do you know, that's the average, I would think. Nicole, would you mind just getting Mara Lee? Good evening to all of you who are attending our District 5 member of the Board of Supervisors debate this evening. I want to welcome the audience, and of course I want to introduce our two candidates this evening, Debbie Arnold and Ellen Barreau, and we thank you both for spending your next hour with us here during this debate. I want to, again, welcome all of you. A couple of housekeeping. The restrooms are out either set of double doors straight down the hallway. Phones, please take your phone and silence them for this next hour. Thank you. And as we leave this evening, we need to all pick up any trash we have to keep our Board of Supervisors chamber clean and tidy. Thank you so much. My name is Biz Steinberg, and I serve as the CEO of the Community Action Partnership of San Luis Obispo, and I am here representing both the Latino Outreach Council, as well as I am a member of the League of Women Voters. So I'm happy to be here with you. And at this time, I'm going to introduce Mara Lee, who is going to go over our guidelines for this evening's meeting and debate. Thank you, Mara Lee.
Thank you, Ms. I'm Mara Lee Hyman with the League of Women Voters. Some of you I welcomed last hour. I'll repeat a few things, so thank you for your attention. This forum is co-sponsored by Latino Outreach and the League of Women Voters. The League and Latino Outreach are both nonpartisan organizations of women and men. Yes, 25% of the League are men. We work to promote political responsibility through informed, active participation in government, and that's what we're doing here tonight. Neither of the organizations supports any candidate, nor do we support any party. So we try to get even information out there to you folks. The format for today will be opening statements by the candidates of 3 minutes and closing statements of 3 minutes. The questions will take 1.5 minutes, unless it's a pretty complicated one and the moderator says, no, we need a little more time, but she'll let you know if that happens. I'd like to introduce the people who are helping tonight from the League. And I'm going to sneak this in because I forgot last hour. This is being live streamed. So if you say, oh, this is really interesting, go step outside, give a call to your friend and say, turn on your however you get it through the web, through the open web. And it will be repeated and streamed if you go to Slow Span on the web. So there are many ways you can see this again if you want to, or get your friends and neighbors to also tune into what's going on. We have runners they're scattered. Runners, stand up, raise your hand, hold up a card. They're collecting your questions. This forum is successful if you ask good questions, so we really need you to participate. That's Victoria Connor-Williams, Bonnie Ernst, Norma Guzman and Cynthia Pretzel. They just hold up your card, one question per card. They'll be running through the whole hour. Just say you want a card, give it back to them when you're done, hold it up, they'll collect it. They'll bring it up here to our sorters. Our sorters are Claudia Davis, Shelley Higginbotham, and our third one is Ann Quinn. They will sort the questions so we don't get duplicates. You don't want to hear the same question over and over. And they will hand them over to the readers on the extreme left of this dais. And that's Jean Chinichi and Jerry Mihatch. Jerry is on the board of the Latino Outreach. Jean is one of our league members. The timing will be taken care of by Mary Beth Armstrong up here in front so everybody can see her. Mary Beth, do you have your 30 seconds sitting there on your, hold up your 30 second warning so they know they're running out of time. And then when they do run out of time, she will hold up a stop sign so you can see, and we'll keep track. We'll try to get as many questions that you write as we can. Let's see if there's anything else I haven't said. I think that pretty much covers it for now. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much. So we are getting ready to begin with our openings by our two candidates for District 5. They flipped a coin, and Debbie Arnold is going to begin with her three-minute opening comments.
Thank you, Biz. And I just want to start by thanking the League of Women Voters and the Latino Outreach Council for once again providing an informative forum tonight for the voters out there to familiarize themselves with the candidates and their choices. I want to start out by just talking a little bit about why I got into this to this business of running for office. And originally, I was elected to this seat in 2012. I ran then to bring what I thought needed to happen, better representation to this Board of Supervisors, particularly when it came to family farms, small businesses, working families, and seniors. To the job, I brought both my personal and professional experience. My personal experience, I've 44 years ago, I married a working cowboy and lived some years in the most remote parts of the county. We're still the family, generational family, in the cattle and farming business in the northeastern part of the county. When we started our family and I went into town to enroll my two young children into preschool, this knows about all this, I found there weren't any, and there was a long, long waiting list. And that was a kind of a turn that my career made, in that I purchased a preschool and I ran it for 17 years and really enjoyed the work. In those 17 years, I worked with thousands of young families, young working families, and really got to know the community. All the while, both my husband and I worked coaching youth sports and really volunteering a lot in the community. Another turn in my career that was unexpected, I was offered a job. I ended up selling the preschool when our two children moved to San Luis to go to Cal Poly, and we needed more help at the ranch. But I was offered an opportunity to go to work for other elected officials, local elected officials. So I spent 5 years as a legislative assistant here at the county, and later working for our Assemblyman, later Senator Sam Blakesley. Invaluable experience for this job, or I feel like it helps me better represent you, understanding the governmental process at most levels of the government, and having a lot of experience by providing constituent service to others. But what have I done the last few years? I am very proud to say that I have tried to keep taxes low, and fees low for our working families, and actually was named Hero of the Taxpayer by the Central Coast Taxpayers Association. Supported the airport extension, construction, and I'm sure we'll talk about some of these things, of the homeless shelter at 40 Prado. Really worked hard for fair distribution of the water, particularly in the North County. Advocated to have road maintenance become a priority in our budget. Expanded county jail medical services, increased funding for law enforcement. All these things were important to me, but more importantly, important to my constituents. Worked with the Fire Safety
Debbie,
Council.
Mm-hmm. Time is
I'm sorry, I didn't see the stop sign. Thank you.
But thank you so much. I'd like to have Ellen Barrow make her 3-minute opening statement. Thank you.
Thank you. My name's Ellen Barrow, candidate for District 5 Supervisor. And my husband and I and our family, we've lived in this county since 1999. My husband and I, we own an electrical contracting company. And I want to thank we have some of the IBW apprentices in our audience tonight. And I want to thank all of you, actually, for making the time to come out on a Thursday night. You could be at Farmer's Market, but no, you're here. And I also want to thank Latino Outreach and Legal Women Voters for also hosting this event. So I've been in the county for 1999, and I'm deeply rooted in this community. I run a small business with my husband. I work at the Atascadero State Hospital as a dietitian. I raised my 2 children here. And when I was raising my children, I served on the Planning Commission, on City Council, and as mayor in Atascadero. Like you, I care about this county, and I love being in San Luis Obispo. It's a very special place. I know you care as well about our economy, about our environment, and our quality of life. We're such an extraordinary county, it's hard to imagine that we shouldn't have a leadership and a government that reflects those same values. And that is why I'm running. I have a passion for public service. I love giving back to my community and building trust, like I did in Atascadero, to increase community engagement in local government. Tonight, I will share with you my past experiences and how I can help move our county forward. You will see a clear choice tonight, and you will see the differences between Ms. Arnold and myself. 3 issues where I believe that leadership was lacking and we deserve better. 1 is housing. Ms. Arnold has opposed restructuring fees that could have helped build workforce housing. On homelessness, Ms. Arnold has refused twice to support the federal food stamp program. And just the other night, I met a woman, a single mother, who lost her food stamps. And this is an essential income that prevents people from becoming homeless in the first place. And on water, Ms. Arnold has refused to respect the irrigated agriculture in the Paso Water Basin, threatening their future viability. We cannot afford 4 more years of inaction from our Board of Supervisors. We cannot afford 4 more years of poor leadership when we have so many challenges ahead of us. So tonight, I'm happy that we will be getting questions directly from the crowd so we can hear from you, and I will be able to tell you more about myself. Thank you.
Thank you both for your opening statements. I want to thank Gene and Jerry. They take the show now with the questions. I will just start it out that question 1 will go to Ms. Barrow first, and Ms. Arnold will answer second. So take it away.
Unions have always negotiated on behalf of its members for better wages and working conditions. In light of the fact that SLO County is one of the lowest paid in California compared to affordability, what is your opinion about strengthening union membership to help combat young men and women leaving our county?
I'm the chief steward of my union at the Atascadero State Hospital, so I'm very familiar how unions protect workers and are a benefit for employees. And I know the county has faced a tremendous amount of losses of employees. And I know that in the last round of negotiations, the county was not able to give them the raise that they thought they deserved. And I think when we look at how the county deals with their employees, that we have to make sure that our budget reflects our values and that we are supporting our workforce. And in terms of union participation in the county. I think when we have more unions and more participation of young people in unions, that we will have a stronger middle class. And I think that's a very important point. Can you repeat the question again? I think there was a two-part to that, wasn't there? Can you repeat that, please? I'm sorry.
Could you repeat it? Could you repeat
Okay, I'll just keep talking.
Certainly. I didn't hear you, was all. It's a long one. Unions have always negotiated on behalf of its members for better wages and working conditions in light of the fact that SLO County is one of the lowest paid in California compared to affordability. What is your opinion?
Okay. So I'm going to run out of time
Beth,
here.
And Mary Beth, would you just start with, give her the 30 seconds?
Yeah.
Thank you.
And the other thing I know that we have a problem with is with the sheriff's department. We have a lot of vacancies. And my future son-in-law happens to be a deputy sheriff in Ventura. And every time he comes up here, people talk to him and says, when are you going to move back to SLO? Because we'd really like to have you at the sheriff's department. So I know that that difference is happening outside of our jurisdiction. And we need to make sure that our wages matches the neighboring counties, or we will lose people. So that's very important to us.
Thank you. Ms. Arnold.
Yes. Thank you. And I see a lot of the union members here, and I want you all to know that I've always said I appreciate your apprentice program and the fact that you're all being trained to do really skilled work in our communities. With that, I'll just say when the county goes out and bids jobs, they're by law prevailing wage jobs, and we're happy about that. The county's doing everything we can always to ensure that we're paying fair and wages, and hoping to make sure that our employees and all the workers here in the county are fairly compensated. It's a balancing act, though, because especially with county projects, the money that provides the services to all of the citizens of the county is paid by taxpayers. So really a balancing act to try to provide all the services with limited resources or revenues that we have. I have to say, though, that we do a good job of trying to keep up with or at least compensate for cost of living increases. We're faced with a lot of things you're faced with at home, insurance costs rising, things that are out of our control, and trying to ensure that the wages are fair and the taxpayers don't have to reach back into their pocket. All of you, working union members or non-union members, are going to end up paying the tax bill to make sure that we aren't overspending here at the county. I want to say I'm proud that I have been endorsed by the San Luis Obispo Southwest Regional Council of Carpenters, and that I've had.
Thank you. I want to make one comment to the audience, because I think I heard a couple of phones. Just make sure you've silenced your phone so it doesn't distract from our guests. Thank you so much. And I'm just going to remind everyone that we are giving 1.5 minutes for each response, so that you sort of know how that's going. And I'm watching the clock, so that I believe we will begin our closing arguments right at 8. We didn't start right on time, and I want them to have as many questions to respond to that you are sharing from the audience. Thank you. We will go to question 2, and Ms. Arnold will be first on this question. Jerry.
Our country is more divided than ever, and our Board of Supervisors has also been experiencing partisan division. What can we do to encourage more civility on the Board of Supervisors, and will you commit to maintaining civility during the campaign?
Yes, and not only will I commit to that, I have committed to that. We work together, and League of Women Voters has been instrumental as well in trying to ensure that that there is civility on the board. One thing that, and I just finished my stint as chairman of the Board of Supervisors, but that's important to me is to extend that show of respect to the people and the citizens that come here to the Board of Supervisors meetings. Sometimes we see that doesn't happen, but it has been a goal of mine, and I can tell you in 7 years that I've always tried to show respect. It's the people's house here, people's business, and we work for the people we represent. So not only civility amongst ourselves, but civility to the citizens that come in to speak their mind. I think all of that is very important. Thank you for the question.
Thank you. Ms. Barreau, your turn.
Civility is something that is essential for government to work properly. And when I was in Atascadero, we had our issues there. And when I think about civility, I think we have to call out bigotry and hate when we see it happen. And this did happen with one of the board supervisors, planning commissioners. And Ms. Arnold has not taken the stance to denounce that. And I find that troubling since she has signed the civility code. And as of today, there was a press release from her campaign calling me a chicken. I don't think that's respectful, and I don't think that's civil discourse between two people who are running for office. So I don't believe that that she's very good at being civil. When I was on Atascadero City Council, we worked on building public trust, and one of those is honesty, open-mindedness, and being a true listener to those who you are trying to interact with. The most important job of an elected official is to make decisions that affect your whole community. And so you need to have open ears and be able to listen and feel what people are saying to you when they're talking about an issue. And so I have trouble with civility from Ms. Arnold, and I'm disappointed that at this stage of the game, I'm being called a chicken when I have worked really hard for the last 10 months.
Thank you. We are on to question 3, and Ms. Barreau, you will answer first.
Are you in favor of stopping off-road vehicles in the dunes, and are you in favor of stopping off-road vehicles in the dunes? It's written twice.
Okay. Well, no, I'm not in favor of shutting down off-road vehicles, but I think the bigger question here is a public health issue for the residents that live in Napomo. There's about 10,000 residents on the Napomo Mesa, and they are affected by dust that comes off the dunes. And so what studies have shown is that the off-road vehicle areas has increased the amount of dust, that, and they are having very severe bad air quality on certain days in the Mesa. So if as your next supervisor, when I sit on the APCD board, my first goal is about public health. There is no reason why people on the Mesa should not have the same air quality of people that live in Atascadero. So our responsibility is to make sure that the state parks and the scientific advisory group that is advising on how we're going to reduce the dust to a minimal level, that needs to be followed, and that's my responsibility, is to put public health above anyone's profits or recreational needs. I'm a mountain biker. If it rains, I don't go mountain biking because I don't want to hurt the environment. Same thing there. So there has to be a forgiveness of if something's happening and you see it's negative, that you have to make amends to put it right. The other issue is there is an endangered species, the snowy plover, that is affected by off-road vehicles. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Arnold.
Sure thing. No, I am not in favor of excluding the off-road vehicles. I have to say that out of 1,040 some odd miles of coastline in the state of California, about 1.5 miles are dedicated for the citizens of California to recreate with their off-road vehicles on a state park. And we get, it was mentioned earlier, 2 million visitors a year. It's a huge part of the economy in the South. I was happy. I want to say that the dunes in the Mesa has naturally a higher level of PM10s in the air. But this was just released in the late fall, and it's the annual air quality report 2018, and it does state The ozone trends show either continued improvement or leveling off. PM10s on the Napomo Mesa improved, and PM2.5 annual average decreased as well. So what we're seeing through mitigation and mitigation efforts, but we're seeing that the air quality on the Mesa is improving, and I hope that that continues.
Thank you very much. We are moving to question number 4, and Ms. Arnold will respond first.
Hey, this is a big picture question. Do you support the overturn of Citizens United, or do you think that unlimited corporate spending has been beneficial to our democratic process?
Unlimited corporate spending to our democratic process. Well, that's for me, I call it whiteboarding. When you look at the pros and you look at the cons, and just about everything will whiteboard with pros and with cons. In this free market society we live in, we do have large corporations that make in sometimes excessive amounts of money, you could almost say, but the pros of that is most often those are providing jobs and providing us with goods and services at an affordable price, so the economy of scale thing. The question is an odd one to me because it's way out of my pay grade as a county board of supervisor. But I would just say that on a case-by-case basis, sometimes we might see that the very wealthy corporations may or may not be a good thing for a particular area. But I'm going to say, generally speaking, we do many times we benefit, all of us benefit individually from what they provide or the jobs they provide.
Thank you. Ms. Perot.
I'm definitely in support of overturning Citizens United. I think too much money in politics has led to people not wanting to run for office because the first thing someone asks you is, well, how much money can you raise? And I'm not a rich person, so when I think about all the money I have to raise to become a county supervisor, it's kind of ridiculous. Between the two of us, it'll probably be like $600,000. Can you think of what we could do with $600,000? So I believe money in politics corrupts, and it limits the participation of everyone else because the people who win are the people who raise the most money. And when I was on the city of Atascadero, we did campaign reform and ethics, and so we looked at having limits in our race. And when I was when people contributed to my campaign this time, they said, well, what are your limits in your county? And I said, well, we're practically the only county that has no campaign limit. And so it's escalated over the last years with the Citizens United decision. So I would definitely be open to campaign reform. I think it's healthy that people have more influence. You don't have to have money to have influence or to even get an appointment, right? You want to be able to welcome people in, and you want to people to feel like their voice matters and that they don't have to write you a check to be heard. Thank you.
Thank you. On to question 5, and Ms. Barreau will take the first response.
What is the county doing to address homelessness, and are increased services bringing in more out-of-town homeless individuals?
The reports I've heard is that 70% of the people who are homeless in our county are from our county. So the notion that, you know, people are flying in from Texas or something to enjoy our winter time is definitely not true. I have to say, during my 10 months of campaigning, this is the one issue that comes up every single time I talk to people. It is upsetting to see so many people that are unsheltered in our community. And that those numbers have been going up 16% in the last year. And more needs to be done. So I'm sure Debbie will tell you that, you know, we've done all these great programs and we've housed 70 people in the last year. When reports tell you that there's 1,000 to maybe 2,000 people unsheltered in our community, it clearly states to me that more needs to be done. When you think about going back to the budget, what are the priorities of the budget? And I've heard Ms. Arnold say that the roads are going to be the priority of our budget. And so for me, that makes it clear to me that she's not listening to her constituents who have said clearly homelessness is the top issue. Ms. Arnold has opposed the Homeless Services Oversight Council's recommendations on multiple times, and she has supported the Trump administration cutting funds that could help our homeless population. It's important for our community to take responsibility for this issue. People want to give back. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Arnold.
I am going to tell you that we've created several new programs recently that have helped with our homeless, and the one I'm most proud of is, working on the board of CAPSLO, chairing the Homeless Oversight Council for 5 years when I first began as a supervisor. We did create that program. It's now called 70 Now, originally 50 Now, but it's just a program, and it is a program that identifies the most chronically homeless folks in our county, whether it's their age or their health or whatever, taking them off the street and finding them homes where they can have wraparound services. It's been a very successful program, but that's not the only program we have. We actually house and provide shelters all over the county, and we've really increased the numbers. But the greatest the thing I'm most proud of is playing a small role in working collaboratively with our Regional Transit Authority and CAPSLO to locate the 40 Prado Center. That was very controversial about where that would be located, but now that it's established, it's a beautiful campus, 100 beds, provides services, counseling, all that. In a central location, we have spent a lot more money up in Atascadero, and we're working with South County and far north in Paso. These are shelters. People have to want to come to be sheltered there, but we have them available.
Thank you. Question number 6, and that will go first to Ms. Arnold.
What will you do to promote new businesses in our area?
Yes, we're doing a lot along those lines. So we do know that that Diablo Canyon is won't be with us forever. But so we have established several ways to try to ensure that our economy doesn't have a hiccup when Diablo closes. Now, one of the things though we don't talk about, we talk about the loss of jobs. We have not been talking about the 10 years after Diablo closes, when the decommissioning of the plant will provide actually twice as many jobs as we see out there now. And these will be high-paying jobs, and I'm sure that the young men that are present here will be playing a role in that. So we have a little bit of time, but expanding our opportunities here, and with tourism, we've expanded the airport not only to attract more business into the tourism that we provide here, but also to attract more businesses to come into San Luis Obispo. And a lot of work throughout the county is being done to try to increase affordable housing for the workforces and make sure that the jobs and housing balance, the jobs are located where the houses are and vice versa, so we aren't building at one end of the county and expecting folks to drive, which has happened here for decades in this county with San Luis being the center, but to try to spread it out and ensure we have our infrastructure can hold up under all these great new plans. But that will
thank you. Ms. Barreau,
can you just question, please.
What will you do to promote new businesses in our area?
Well, we're lucky enough to have Cal Poly next door, and we have a lot of entrepreneurs that come out of Cal Poly, and and so we need to embrace new opportunities that come our way, whether they're startups from Cal Poly or from the Hot House program, or whether they're coming from agriculture in terms of cannabis and hemp production, which are the latest additions to the agricultural community. Currently, Ms. Arnold is turning her back on those. She has shut down hemp production and has pretty much squashed the cannabis opportunities that our county could have benefit from. One thing I think is really important is when we do, when the county does some of its larger infrastructure projects, that we employ the community workforce agreement or project labor agreement that incorporates keeping our jobs local and making sure that the money stays in our community. Another opportunity we have is with Diablo closing, there's a lot of infrastructure there. We could be the home of a new renewable energy power generation plant. And one opportunity that we missed on was the failure to approve Community Choice Energy, which would have saved taxpayers or ratepayers $8.3 million a year in the county alone. That was a missed opportunity by Ms. Arnold, who wouldn't even put it on the agenda. So new business. Thank you.
Thank you. Question number six.
Do you support fracking and oil drilling in protected areas and or offshore?
And the first question goes to Ms. Burrell.
That's me. I do not support fracking, and I do not support any new oil drilling in our community. Our economy is based on tourism, and I think a lot of us enjoy the quality of life we have recreating in this beautiful county, and one oil spill would put an end to that. And you have to think about our long-term goals as well. We can't be so short-sighted. California as a whole wants to go carbon-free, and we're kind of behind the times by not accepting Community Choice Energy. And regarding oil drilling, my opponent is also in favor of allowing oil drilling in the Carrizo Plain, fracking all around the Carrizo Plain in Montana de Oro at Los Osos Middle School. Fracking is having a field day due to the Trump administration, and this is one area where I really wish Ms. Arnold would not support the Trump administration.
Thank you, Ms. Arnold.
Yes. So the question was about new oil drilling and fracking. We don't frack in this county. We do have oil interests in the county. The what is now owned by Sentinel Peaks has been a working producer of oil, an area that has produced oil in this county for almost 100 years. I have not been one to say do away with the infrastructure that we have that's providing oil, that's providing fuel for the folks here in this county and beyond, but I don't expect to see in this county new drilling, and certainly not new offshore drilling.
Thank you. Question number eight, we'll go to Ms. Arnold first.
Parking lots at popular hiking trails are nearly always full. What ideas do you have for maintaining or increasing open space opportunities?
We have created a lot of new open space opportunities, and the county annually continues to provide funding to extend the Bob Jones Trail. Just last week, we voted to move forward with a trail that would connect Santa Margarita all the way through Atascadero and up to Templeton. So we understand that the need for bike trails and open space continues. People enjoy their open space here in the county, and we have a lot of it. We do what we can as we can afford to, but from here on out, I expect that we'll be working to finish up some of the projects that we've started, and the Bob Jones Trail being probably one of the most popular here in the county.
Thank you. Ms. Burrow.
Thank you. I have a strong history in land preservation. I'm a board member of the Atascadero Land Preservation Society, and if you live in Atascadero, you might have hiked at the Three Bridges Oak Preserve. It's a fabulous place, and we allow, of course, the public to access that. And when you see those crowded parking lots, that's a great sign that people are getting out and enjoying themselves, and it also shows that more needs to be created so we can have more opportunities. And one thing that is lacking is District 5 has limited open space areas that are open to the public, and I believe that we could be doing more to preserve some of those beautiful open landscapes that we see in the county. When I think about open spaces, the other part is the agricultural industry also creates those great landscapes as well. And in the North County, when we're worried about the water basin and what we can grow with the limited water we have, we need to make sure that the irrigated ag users are actively involved so we can keep that area as land and not become sprawl. So open spaces are important to our county. It's important to all the residents, and we need to make sure that we have a plan for it. Thank you.
Thank you. We're marching to question 9.
What will you do to promote universal pre-K for working parents in county or state regulated centers?
And this will go to Ms. Barreau first.
I think that would be wonderful. I'm not sure exactly how much influence the county has on that, because I think most funding comes from state and federal government. But I am definitely a proponent of anything that helps our youth. And having working families in our community feel supported by having a pre-K program in place would be wonderful. We want to support good health and good education, and that will set them up for a future that is better. What I think we should do is also strengthen the daycare system in our county. That is one of the limiting factors for many people to come back to work, is whether they have adequate daycare after giving birth. So I think the county can play a role in that. We do have county services, and we can provide support to people who want to provide daycare and also provide support so they can stay compliant with all the regulations in there. Adequate daycare is critical for our economy, because if you are limiting the number of workers in the workforce, that would be a problem. And so this is an essential service that we need to provide for our working families.
Thank you. Ms. Arnold.
Yes. Well, preschool and early childhood education is very important to me, and I dedicated quite a good portion of my life to that. But I see we do have lots of good programs throughout the county. We have state preschool. We have really good Head Start programs going on here in the county. And other programs, the Child Care Resource Center here in town. But I see the future of the preschools employers providing as a way to attract employees to their businesses, that preschools might come into play with employers. So the county is looking into that and working with a lot of the other major employers here in the county to collaborate on those kinds of programs, so that that may be an offset or a kind of a perk, if you will, for people that come into this county. We might not be the biggest county, we might not pay the highest wages, but we might have things that help with quality of life and hopefully attract young people and workers into these jobs.
Thank you. Question number 10, please.
Now, where do you stand on a Proposition 13 split roll tax, and how would you minimize financial impact on consumer goods?
And the first respondent will be Ms. Arnold.
Yes. So I'm very opposed to Prop 13 and the split roll. The split roll being the separating commercial properties away from Prop 13 protection, and then they would be taxed differently. The second part of this question is how you would prevent that kind of a thing from increasing costs to consumers, and I don't think you would. Obviously not. Either people wouldn't open businesses or invest in commercial property, or they would absorb the cost, and with unlimited taxation on commercial properties, I think we'd all be paying for that for a long time. Last year, the state of California recognized a $21 billion surplus. Those are not the times to be asking for more taxes or trying to harm the economy by heavily taxing commercial properties.
Thank you. Ms. Barreau.
Well, you say Prop 13 and everybody just kind of cringes, right? So, of course, Prop 13 has had a significant impact on us all over the years, and of course the longer you've lived here, the more you've benefited from it. The split role thing, I think I've heard it's problematic, so I'm not supporting that concept at the moment, but it does bring up the general point of how do we pay for the services we provide our citizens. And I remember when I first came to California, I was still in high school, and the schools were just freaking amazing. They were amazing. And when my kids went to school, many years later, the schools were falling apart. They didn't even have Wi-Fi. You know, it was just the excitement to go to school was way down because Prop 13 has really hampered a lot of people or a lot of governmental organizations and schools to provide the services that we deserve as citizens. We pay our taxes and we demand that we have good services. So I think it was a huge disservice to the students of California when we passed Prop 13. It also, one of the problems with in Atascadero is that we can't collect enough money to pave all our roads in Atascadero. That has something to do with Prop 13. So I'm not saying, we just have to be creative when we think about how we're going to do that. And so some kind of revision of taxes happens periodically. I don't ever want to use the word Prop 13. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we are going to do question 11. With the first response going to Ms. Barreau, and this will be our last question. Question 11.
What creative solution can you think of to solve our housing crisis?
Housing. Housing is, you know, we're all happy when we have it, but a lot of people don't have it. And it makes them want to leave, or it makes them leave our county because they can't afford it. When you think about it, my children can't afford to live here, and I'm sure a lot of you would like to have your family closer to home. And many businesses have told me during this campaign that they lose employees due to lack of affordability in our county. So this is such a big problem that no one person or no one entity can really solve it. It needs to be a partnership. And I know that Coalition of Housing Partners has come before the Board of Supervisors giving ideas of how we can work towards creating some workforce housing and housing in the right places and the right size and along our transportation corridors. So to do that, we need to have the political will to say, yes, I will create a revenue stream so nonprofits can leverage that money and build the housing units we need. Our population is looking for all different kinds of housing, different sizes, different locations, and we need to be strategic on how we use our expertise as a county and find ways to make the process easier to build those units.
Thank you. Ms. Arnold.
Yes. So today, since I've been elected, we've worked closely with the Home Builders Association. The government doesn't build the houses. So what we need to do is make it feasible for the people that do build houses to continue to build them and the kinds of houses that we need and there's demand for. I'm really proud to say that government's really getting smarter lately, and the county has helped facilitate an action team, including all the seven cities, our regional transportation authorities, SLOCOG, everybody coming together. We know that the state has sent us the numbers that they would like to see housing available in numbers, over 10,000 houses be built in the next 8 years. To do that, finally, we're all working together and trying to say, you know, this is an opportunity to put houses over here where the infrastructure and the resources and the jobs can all we work together to get this all right with the jobs housing balance, so we have everything in the right spot, and all of that working together to keep congestion from our freeways, make sure we have the resources we need to build the houses, and then build by design so they're more affordable.
Thank you both for getting through 11 questions, one extra than last time. We are now, as we up here and the audience, we are interested to hear your closing statements of 3 minutes. And when you flipped your coin, Ms. Ellen Barreau, you are going to go first, followed by Ms. Debbie Arnold. Please go ahead.
San Luis Obispo is an amazing place. And if you ever go on vacation, you always want to come back home. And I know that you all care about this county as much as I do. And when we think about the need to navigate the challenges that we're facing, we need excellent leadership and incredible vision to get us there. The challenges we face are not unsolvable. Some will take money. But all will need optimism and vision for where we can go, and curiosity to do the research and to think about all the different solutions to the problem. And we need a willingness to serve our public and meet their needs. And we need someone who's willing to step out and lead. As your supervisor, I will put our community first, like I did in Atascadero, and I will bring people together to address the challenges we face with creativity, science, and facts, and compassion for our community. I believe good governance can happen. I want to help everyone succeed, and our county services should do that, whether it's applying for a permit and getting one in a timely manner, making sure we have workforce housing options, and making sure we are actually taking action on our climate action plan that has been collecting dust. We need to make sure that our water resources become sustainable and support our agricultural. And as your next supervisor, that is what I will do. Now more than ever, we need smart, honest leadership to guide our county to the future we want to see. You've heard the differences tonight, and I think we all know that the future needs more ideas and a better outlook. We cannot risk our future by staying the course. I want to take a moment and recognize the over 1,500 donors that have given to my campaign and the volunteers that have powered me to this day. I have broad support from across the community, from labor unions to individuals to CEOs, small businesses, and the agricultural industry. They trust that I have the right vision for our future. I am ready for the challenges we face. I have the skills and the experience to get the job done right. And as you vote, think of a better future and vote for Ellen Barreau by March 3rd. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Ellen Arnold.
Yep, that's
sorry about that, Debbie.
I want to thank you for coming out and spending time and showing interest in this coming up election. It will be another important election, and San Luis Obispo County is special, and I'm confident that as we continue to work hard, we will continue to bring viable solutions to some of the challenges that we face. The housing, we talked about many of them, the housing and the homelessness crisis, the water. We've made great strides on those issues, and I want to continue to work to represent you and continue to work hard, and while we're retaining our quality of life that we've discussed today in this forum. We spend a lot of time on policy issues. We've passed a balanced budget every year I've been on the board, but I want to tell you, I work more behind the scenes than what you ever see me working out in front. As a supervisor, I spend every day on different boards and with different organizations, really making a difference and really providing those services, in many times in collaboration with other nonprofits, for all of the citizens of all ages and all incomes here in this county. My work has earned me the support of our Sheriff Ingram Parkinson, our District Attorney Dan Dow, our County Assessor Tom Bordenaro, and many other leaders throughout the community. And while I'm proud to have those endorsements from those community leaders, the most important endorsement for me will be made by the voters on March 3rd. So I humbly ask for your vote to continue doing the work that we have found so much success doing. And I look forward to more discussions on how, from you and from these kinds of community discussions on how we can continue to make San Luis such a wonderful place to live. Thank you.
Thank you. Please join me in thanking both of our candidates tonight. Thank you for being here. I want to also thank the audience and the Latino Outreach Council, as well as the League of Women Voters. Just a wonderful evening to hear our candidates from two districts. Couple of extra thoughts here. This is the 100th year anniversary of the women's right to vote. I thought that's educational tonight, as well as the 100-year founding of the League of Women Voters across this country. For those of you who may have a new address, I hope that you will stop at the voter booth outside. Get it all up to date. And what do we need to do? We need to vote on March 3rd. I really want to thank again our District 5 candidates. And two little announcements, or Mr. Lara will be upset with me. I am here representing Jacqueline Frederick, who has a family emergency, and we wish the best for her. She wanted you all to know about two events coming up. The Latino Outreach Council are going to be sponsoring an international a film at the International Film Festival here, and they also will be hosting a Mother's Day fiesta on Saturday, May 9th. So add those to your calendars, and again, have a safe trip home this evening. Pick up your trash, and again, let's thank our candidates.